CoonFarmersMarket.org. From Forthright Cider, Youngsville. Ciders and mead crafted with locally sourced ingredients, supporting community charities with a portion of sales through the Solidarity Cider Program. ForthrightCYDER.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome to the Local Edition, news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And it's Wednesday, so we're going to get the latest on jobs and the economy at Work Shift Live coming up. But first, it's time for the first thing that we do on Wednesdays. It's our weekly news roundup. For that, we turn to reporter Liam Mayo from The River Reporter. Hello, Liam. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So I know there's a few stories that you're following here. Let's start on the Pennsylvania side of the river in Honesdale. Pedestrian was hit on Church Street. Liam, what can you tell us about this situation and what are officials saying in Honesdale?
So there was a pedestrian on April 30th who was crossing the street on Church Street, which is a street that runs parallel to Honesdale's Main Street, and got hit by a car that was turning. And the pedestrian is all right, according to latest reports. No serious injury sustained there, no fatality. But it's reignited the conversation around traffic patterns in Honesdale. The way it's set up currently and the way that it was set up, I believe, over a decade ago, Church Street goes one way and Main Street goes another way. They're both two-lane roads,
yeah,
and they were changed to be both one-ways. And that has been the site of several accidents before. There was a fatal accident in 2011 that resulted in a $2 million settlement. And just the fact that there was a recent accident there has gotten people talking about it again, and especially Mayor Derek Williams, who ran his election campaign last year with making Honesdale a more pedestrian-friendly community as one of his focuses. He's, I believe, has a background in community planning. And that is one of his passions, trying to make Honesdale a more livable place for pedestrians and not just a place for cars to drive through and pass through. So he's just trying to start the conversation around, both in town government and sort of more in the community around, well, what could the potential options be? Do we go back and change those streets back to away from those one-way streets? Are there signs? Are there better enforcement of speeding tickets? And just kind of revisiting all of the different possibilities that could occur there.
Huh. You know, it's a unique setup. I was surprised. I started going to Honesdale a lot more once I came on staff here at the radio, started going to our Honesdale studio more. And that was one of the first things I had to learn is Main Street goes one way, Church Street goes the other way. And it frustrated me at first, but I assumed that it was set up that way because that's safer. I'm like, well, I guess it's safer to have, and more efficient and more safe. And to my mind, Honesdale is one of the more pedestrian oriented towns. So this is interesting to me. Do you know, is this just like a pet issue of the mayor's, or does this come out of a body of thought among people in Honesdale? Already people in Honesdale saying, you know, this is not a good setup for pedestrians?
I don't know how wide the body of thought is. I know that people have been talking on Facebook about different ways of fixing this and talking with the presumption that this is a problem. And I know that pedestrian safety, as well as the state of Honesdale's police force, which is, if properly staffed and if out in full force, is an organization that could help ensure pedestrian safety by making sure people aren't speeding and the like. So I know this has been a conversation that's been going on for some time, Whether I don't know whether there's widespread support for re-engineering that the way it's currently set up, or of making any kind of drastic change there.
All right. Back to a story that we've been following on and off for a while now is the state of Billy's Law. And of course, this was something that Mike Martucci was fighting for. Assemblywoman Aileen Gunther here in New York was also pushing for this. This was in response to a local firefighter who died fighting a fire that was started by an arsonist who had been incarcerated and then was not. And now Senator Martucci is saying that Billy's Law has passed. Is that the news?
It's well, we're not quite there yet. It's passed out of the Senate Codes Committee, which is one of the steps it needs to pass through. It's kind of earned preliminary approval. It would still need to go before votes in both committees. But what he's said in his announcement is that Billy's Law, or the vote bringing it out of the Senate Codes Committee, was on bipartisan lines. So at least the way he's presenting it, it has fairly strong approval. And I know he was trying to get it included in the budget talks earlier in the year, and there were a number of tweaks to bail reform that were passed in those budget talks earlier in the year, I believe. But this was not among them at the time, so I guess in theory it just needed a little more time to gather the support, or to give it a little more time in this committee before it could pass through and get a full hearing.
Okay. And then another story that you're tracking here is, I think it's about a week and a half ago, Patricio Rubio on this program talked to a resident from Bethel who was upset about B-side cabins. These are B-E-S-I-D-E, B-side cabins, moving into the area with a development in the Bethel area. Residents said the environmental impact would be harmful to the area. There's a number of listeners let us know they're not happy about this. But since then, we've heard that B-side cabins withdrew its application. So is this a done issue? Liam, where's the story stand?
Yeah, so this story was actually originally broken by the Sullivan County Democrat a few weeks ago with B-side withdrawing its application. And what we've sort of been hearing since is that even though B-side Cabins is no longer interested in that land and will potentially be looking elsewhere to set up this cabin development, for those who may not know, it was going to be a combination of single-family homes and a sort of camping area suitable for year-round use. So they're not going to be doing this on this particular piece of environmentally sensitive property in Bethel anymore, near the hamlet of Smallwood. What we're hearing now is that there was a land preservation organization potentially interested in the site, so was working with local residents to potentially preserve the land, but that, at least as of now, that land has been sold to another developer. So it's a tricky situation where even though B-side isn't there anymore, that doesn't necessarily mean the fight to preserve that land is over, because if another development comes in instead of B-side and that land isn't going to be conserved, I think people locally will still not be entirely happy with that. And the B-side development was going to put aside a lot of land for conservation. So if this is going to be a more traditional development, which there aren't really many details out right now about what that development could be, but we're just not sure as of yet. But either way, it's not this sort of full preservation of the land that people have been looking for. So Beside may be gone, but this particular piece of property is still going to be of great interest to people in Smallwood, to people in Bethel, and hopefully to listeners on the radio. Because we'll probably be hearing about it again.
Yeah, because you'll be keeping an eye on it and letting us know what comes up next. Speaking of what comes up next, the River Reporter comes out tomorrow, the latest edition. What stories can we expect in that?
We've got a very nice feature on a new art exhibit, a new exhibition or showing of art from our very own Jonathan Charles Fox.
Yeah.
So there's some very good pictures of that art, as well as...
Well, hold on now. I'm going to pause you just for a moment there, Liam, just to let the listener know that that's actually the first new episode of Trailer Talk tonight. Coming up in just 20 minutes will be an interview. Sabrina Artel interviewing Jonathan Charles Fox.
Absolutely.
Talking about this exhibit coming up, among other things, I'm sure. So that's going to be in just less than 20 minutes.
Well, stay tuned for that.
And what else you got?
What else we got? We got a health and wellness section, which talks about preparing for international travel, as well as sort of how you pull yourself out of a slump, or just how to deal with those sort of slumping periods in your life. Good news. Good sports, good outdoors. It's a very standard, full-packed, wonderful edition of the River Reporter.
It's a newspaper. It's a weekly newspaper. It'll be on newsstands tomorrow or wherever you get it digitally. Liam Mayo from the River Reporter, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to go over these stories with us here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You be well. Okay, this is a local edition. It's news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. We will be back. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back with the latest on jobs and the economy. It's Work Shift Live. Stay tuned.
This week in This American Life, there were Ukrainian war refugees who flew to Mexico, hoping to cross the border at Tijuana into the United States. We visit their shelter with another refugee, a woman from Mexico, who's also trying to cross and staying in a different shelter.
In serio?
Seriously.
No lo puedo creer.
I don't believe it.
When it's hard to believe what is right in front of your eyes, this week.
Saturday at 6 on Radio Catskill. Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition.
I'm Aaron Bendich. Join me for Borscht Beat, the Jewish music show on Radio Catskill. Each week I share rare, forgotten, and classic recordings from Jewish musical traditions across multiple generations, from Yiddish folk songs to instrumental klezmer, Yiddish theater, and contemporary performances. It's a grand tour of many musical landscapes. That's Borscht Beat, an hour of Jewish music in the Catskills, Sunday afternoons at 1 on Radio Catskill.
And this is a local edition. Welcome back here on Radio Catskill. Now, we've been following multiple stories in Albany that are starting to intersect. There was the scandal. The lieutenant governor resigned yesterday. Governor Kathy Hochul announced her replacement for lieutenant governor, her new running mate. She wants it to be Antonio Delgado, who's currently the congressman for the district that we're in here in Radio Catskill area in Sullivan County. Of course, those districts are going to change. The Democrats in New York State drew new districts, congressional districts. Of course, last week, a judge threw out those districts. And stories keep coming for this. We don't have any updates today, but here's a story from yesterday because Democrats are now asking a federal court to order that New York hold primary elections coming up next month in June with the maps that were just tossed out by the State Court of Appeals last week.
ruled the legislature's congressional and state Senate maps to be an unconstitutional gerrymander last week, but Democrats want a federal court to keep the gerrymandered maps in place so primary elections can be held next month. They argue the primaries need to be held earlier to comply with a federal order made back in 2011. Susan Lerner is executive director of Common Cause New York, which advocates for good government reforms. She says she would like to see all the primaries stay in June.
We've never been a fan of an August primary, and we would like to see the primary stay in June, and we'd like to see it be consolidated.
Republicans have moved to dismiss the suit. A federal judge is hearing the case on Wednesday. In Vestal, I'm Vaughn Golden, WSKG News.
I listen to Bullseye because sometimes I need something that can make me laugh, teach me, and then leave me feeling totally amazed.
I'm Jesse Thorne. This week, the legendary Alan Alda talks with me about MASH, Mel Brooks, and his latest endeavor, podcast hosting. Plus, one of jazz's greatest bassists, Ron Carter. That's on the next Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Coming your way tomorrow afternoon at 2 here on Radio Catskill. And coming your way right now, it's the latest on jobs and the economy around our area, around the country, around the world. For that, we turn to James B. Huntington for Work Shift Live. Hello, James.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, listeners.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
All right, well, James, let's start off here by talking about what happened with interest rates at today's Federal Reserve meeting. Are you watching news coming out of that today?
Yes, sorry. It was released about a little after 2 this afternoon that the interest rates, namely the federal funds target rate, was raised by 0.5 percentage point today. So that was treated as very good news by the markets, which were concerned that it was going to be 0.75 points. There's controversy, of course, going on about exactly how much effort should be done for inflation, but they also said some things indicating that they're not going to start going crazy as some people would like them to do, and the 0.5 point increase was really already baked in the cake. We had a terrible April looking forward or dreading this day or something, and it did not turn out to be anything worse. So that's why the Dow went up 932 today. It liked it.
So this was in keeping with what you were expecting then?
Yes, very much. Yes, they are not totally inflation hawks. They realize they have things to do. They're talking about what they call reducing their balance sheet, which is, in other words, they're going to call or let mature bonds that are out there to stimulate the economy. They're not rushing to do that. They're saying that won't even happen until the beginning of June. Well, that's still less than a month away now, but it's not anything they're jumping to do immediately. So business like that. It was good news. They figured that the downside was more likely than the upside, so this was good news. It seems to me a reasonable, down-the-middle sort of response, a sober one, given that the Fed really should be sober about these things, but while still doing something and wanting people or giving people the chance to pay lower prices for things and have inflation slow down without going too wild about it, which is not a good idea from other standpoints.
Well, along those lines, is the era of cheap and plenty ending?
Well, this sort of came out in a New York Times piece by a couple of their regular correspondents, and what's happening is the supply chains have still been weaker, so we have businesses stocking up when they can, and they may be more robust, the supply chains we have. They may be dealing with friendlier countries now that we know something about who some unfriendly countries that were supplying us are really like. Hello there, Russia. So we don't know how much of a shift there will be away from globalization. It may turn out to be not much at all. So world of cheap and plenty is probably not ending. There will be some shifts and things, but that's how it goes. So the advantage these two have is picking up comments from Janet Yellen, a former Fed chair, and Powell, the current one, saying that supply chains had proved too vulnerable, so they're not going to be as vulnerable. They're going to make them stronger so they will last longer, so this kind of thing won't happen too much. So don't worry about the cheap and plenty era. It's still going on.
Of course, other variable, I mean, that strengthening of the supply chains, that could carry costs. And then, of course, the other story we've been following right along is just that, by and large, many employers have not been paying employees enough. At least that's what we're hearing from the employees. So those are two other variables that might have an impact on that question.
That is true, but the places I've been to, other cities, namely New Orleans and Las Vegas, I'm seeing how beneficial it is when companies apparently pay what they need to get people on the job and then charge more, and people are just paying the more and everything keeps on running. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly a cause of inflation, but it's better than not having what you want.
Right. Another story we've been following right along is just the nature of the workplace and the fact that many people have been working from home. What's the timing of how people work at home? What kind of schedule are they following?
Well, we have sort of a new one that's especially being worked by women with children, and it's falling out to be very commonly 9 to 2 during the day, and then again from about 7 to 10 in the evening, and more hours as necessary, but there's not room for a lot more. So they get the children awake and off to school, and then they start working later than before. Then they catch up with the children at 2 o'clock when they start getting out of school and doing things and fixing dinner for them on the early side, and then going back to work from 7 to 10. Doesn't seem like much of a life, but it allows people to keep going with what they have, if they are raising children, if they have children at home, getting to be quite common. And this may even turn out to be an official or semi-official set of hours when people have choices, flex time and such, and maybe not. Maybe people will just be required to work this time. This could be a go, really, for people who do not have children. It could be sort of a split shift. It is a split shift, but that it turns out in some ways it works better, really, than previously working 8 to 5 or what have you. So this is what we're looking at.
Of course, as people are working at home, and more people are working at home, but there's still people working back at the office, and that's causing some friction?
Yes, it is. This is interesting piece in the BBC, actually, it came out. It was mostly about British people, but it certainly applies here, called "The Simmering Tension Between Remote and In-Office Workers." And the problem is that not every employer really knows what they're doing and has a clear plan and is sticking to their plan about who gets to work from home, who needs to come into the office. So you have employers, in a lot of cases, calling everyone back into the office, which a lot of people don't like. The majority of people would rather work more than home, though hardly everybody. But then you have some senior and apparently favored people who are allowed to continue working from home. And there's not much of explanations being given about why this is. I can speak to this as a cubicle job veteran, that when it seems like some people are being favored, I mean, that is really nasty for morale.
Yeah.
When you don't see why it is, when people get some privileges and other people get told that, no, the company policy is to do such and such, well, the company policy doesn't apply to anyone. So this is really a warning to managers and such to be consistent across your employees. And maybe a good rule of thumb, I think, is that if you can't explain, if you're not willing to explain why some people are allowed to stay home and other people are not, if that's not information you feel decent about explaining, then you probably really shouldn't do it and let everyone have the same sort of rules. If their jobs call for one or the other, fine. I mean, like salespeople, I've often said, really don't have any need to be in the office. But you can tell them that. I mean, you can. That's something everyone can understand. But your normal cubicle job people, where what they do, where productivity is always sort of vague, you can't be telling some people in a work group or a chain of work groups. At AT&T, it was a district. It was about 30 or 40 cubicle workers with five or six manager groups. If you within a district, certainly at that unit, you need to be consistent. And if you see your management style here with problems like this, then make a change, because your employees are not fooled and they will not be happy.
Yeah, and nobody likes unfairness. And there is actually I watched a video about scientific research into unfairness being something that even like lower primates understand. They did a thing where they had chimpanzees, two different chimpanzees, learn how to push a button and get the treat. But one chimpanzee sees the other one getting a better treat. They don't even feel like pushing that button anymore. So unfairness is literally a primal sense that people have.
Give everyone a fair shake and make it the same fair shake.
We've only got 2 minutes left of this segment, and I just wanted to know, I heard about inflation bonds, and that I need to know what that is, and I'm wondering, is it possible that people are actually investing and making money off of inflation? Is that what this means?
This is neat. This is a savings bond. It's a special kind of savings bond. It's Series I. And I had never even heard about these things before. It was in the New York Times yesterday morning. They're designed to be indexed to inflation. So there are people earning 9 or 10% annualized on savings bonds right now. There are restrictions, there are rules, but you can get up to $10,000 per person per year. It's treasurydirect.gov. If you don't remember that, do a search on how to buy savings bonds direct from the government online, then look into that. I think it's well worthwhile when money market accounts are paying so little and the stock market is so volatile. It seems a good way of capitalizing on something that should be around for, in some form, to a greater extent than it has been in past years, certainly for the next 6 months to a year. So you have a chance to make some money on this. It's worth looking at.
And these are government-issued bonds, you're saying?
Yes, they're savings bonds. It's a series of savings bonds.
Series I. Okay. Well, that's the first. It's the first I ever heard of that. But that's why we talk to you every week, so we can learn more about these things. Well, James, we're going to have to get going, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today for the latest on jobs and the economy. Maybe we'll get to the robots next week, because I know you're keeping an eye on them. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, listeners.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
Okay, and that's going to do it for us here on the Local Edition, news and information that keeps you connecting the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Remember, we will be back tomorrow and do it all over again starting at 6:30. Never miss any edition of the Local Edition. Sign up for the Local Edition podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Trailer Talk with Sabrina Artell is up next. Great conversations are on the way. Do stay tuned to WJFF Jeffersonville.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The DeBruce in Livingston Manor, New York, an award-winning restaurant and internationally recognized hotel overlooking the Willowemic Valley. TheDeBruce.com. From The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance,